the bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjo Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Here's Sunjo Gall.
Good morning and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is IT Initiative Failures, Saving a Sinking Ship. Our guests for today's show are Jane London and Charles Hunsinger. Jane is the CIO of the New York City Department of Finance, and Charles is the Vice President and CIO with Corporate Express U.S. Good morning, panel. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
So are we ready for the spring yet or already waiting for summer?
I'm ready for summer.
I'm ready for spring. I've been looking at snow for too long.
Oh, so you are in Colorado, and Jane, you're in New York, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Great. I'm in Chicago, so I see all the possible winters that you could ever imagine.
We've got the country covered just about.
Yeah, that's right. So talking about this IT initiatives that we have, and we've seen many more horror stories than we would have heard, heroic stories where people have success under their belt. And we essentially try to define failure where we either would have gone over budget or there would be suspended action or there is a lot of rework or we have rejection from the user community. And we every time when we have this, we have a hindsight analysis committee which is formed, whether it's one person or multiple, and we learn a few lessons, we document, we move on, but we make somewhat the same mistakes again in many cases. And I guess we have a bunch of mature IT leaders and IT professionals in the team in most companies. So what are we missing here, Jane?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I look at that question and the, you know, the possibilities for failure and say, oh, those are all symptoms. And, you know, very often we like to think that all of those, the good planning is in place, but I think there are still a lot of organizations that are what I call living in chaos. And really are not putting good project plans together, good success plan definitions, not actually getting the right level of sponsorship up front. So yes, we can absolutely do better and we can learn from our mistakes. I mean, so we do those, you know, the due diligence on failures, but I think we rarely actually incorporate what we learn, back into the next project that, goes forward. And sometimes that's more about people and the culture in an organization. So there's some education that has to occur to make sure that you can put a successful plan together.
Well, I agree with a lot of that, Jane. I think that we do see that quite often. And you know, unfortunately, the experience I've seen in cases is that, you know, the interest in people updating their approaches really depends on the pain of the past failure, right? If you've really had a large failure in financial aspects or certain failures of key initiatives, then people look very much more interested at updates to processes or program management approaches and governance. But, you know, for smaller failures, I think it is very much the smaller and disconnected response to how we respond to that. And so I think, you know, some of the things we've seen be very successful is really starting to change the governance approach, the program management approach, and really just have a better back-end response to taking care of those kind of problems.
Would you say this is more like an adoption issue? While you may have all the right type of material, all the right type of methodologies, etc., but somewhere we are failing in the adoption of the same?
Sure. From my perspective, I think it's sometimes a resource issue because certain programs may not get the program management resources or some of those kind of things that could really help. But I do think in other cases, it's just a, you know, is there enough desire to go and make the change or not?
It feels like you're doing a lot of work when you're living in chaos and you feel like you're moving forward, but often you're moving in circles. And I think there's a huge piece of education, and I think actually kind of embedding that culture and the governance and the discipline that's required to be able to be predictable in success, you know, is probably if not at least a year, 2 or 3 years to actually make that part of an IT culture. If they've really been living in culture in chaos, so I think the migration is just having the being able to stick to your guns, kind of saying we're not going to let this just slide away as we forget about that disaster 5 months from now.
So if we had had the same show like 4 years ago or say 10 years ago, have we come any farther ahead in terms of making fewer mistakes and repeating fewer mistakes, or we are still going back in circles? So I could again have the same show, a replica or a replay of this show 10 years from now, and it still be valid.
My response to that would be it would depend on the organization. Some organizations have become terrific at putting process in place, putting governance in place, making sure they have project plans, making sure they're executive sponsors, making sure all the good things that you need to be predictable in making a successful project are in place for an organization. And the culture then kind of lives and breathes that. There are other organizations where they really have not gone through the process, or maybe their leadership doesn't really buy in yet and need some education themselves. So I would say that's organization by organization. I think you'll have the same conversation 5 years from now.
I think that's true. I also believe, though, that we have seen a lot more respect, if you will, be gained over the last 10 to 15 years for the disciplines of program and project management. I think that's always been there at some level, but I think there has been a lot more focus, and there is starting to be a better common understanding of the importance of those types of techniques and disciplines than maybe there was 10 or 15 years ago, in my experience at least.
So with IT being the backbone for most businesses, and we're still not heeding the advice of the folks who've told us, hey, we got to put the right checks and balances in place, we have to adopt these methodologies, otherwise we'll keep suffering with these losses. What do you think could be making this not sink in? With all these people, I mean, do they not have the fear of their job, or they do not see that it has got a direct value? Because, it's almost like teaching a kid to do a certain thing, and he does not buy that, and then we try to just push this thing down their throat. They still don't buy it, but then we figure out there's something else that is a problem of adoption here, why they're not adopting.
That's a great question. I think, there's theory and then there's reality, right? and I think... In the heat of the battle, sometimes it's hard to always do the right thing. And I think people have competing objectives and multiple objectives that are going on. And I think in the juggling of all those items is where things start to break down at times.
I would agree with that. I've probably played a good part of my career has been coming into take over disasters once they're already in a disaster and kind of change the project around and get it on the right path and get it implemented for some very large scale projects. And I will tell you every time there's a different reason. Very often it's all about people though, so it's either the culture of the organization, a risk of adversity, fear, all kinds of things that can occur that cause an organization not to be honest with themselves about where they are. And I think you really need to get to root cause, not just talk about what are the symptoms, but what's the root cause, and face that with, the senior executive team. I've stopped big projects in the past, just stopped them cold and say, we can continue to throw the money off the side of the earth, but there's probably a 90% chance of failure if we continue along the path. And I think sometimes you just need to be that direct to wake people up.
Now, different people may have different definitions of failure. Like, I gave 4 or 5 different areas. And even those have to be quantified in some form for us to say this is failure. And this could also get into a very subjective area. For some people who had a personal agenda which was not met, so they call it failure. For others, it was met, they just kind of take the remaining, partial failures with a grain of salt and say, no, overall it was successful. So at the end of the day, is it all about people, or we can still say, no, there's something to be said about methodologies and project management?
Oh, I don't think it's all about I don't mean to talk over you, but I don't think it's all about people. But certainly when you have some of those measures in place, you've got an appropriate project plan, people are tracking, and you're still having issues that are manifesting themselves, I think that it generally is about people. So I don't get my last response as it's only about people, but the methodologies and just having the discipline of good project management or program management and having the appropriate level of executive sponsorship on large projects are all really important. Having a success criteria laid out at the beginning of a project is important. I mean, you know, defining what success is, people very often forget what success is as you go through the trials and tribulations of trying to implement change.
Charles?
Yeah, I think Jane made a few key points there that first around the definition of success. I think a lot of times that's either too narrow or too broad, and it's important to know what success or failure is going to look like before you begin. I think also that while people is an important element, and another thing I would mention there is how the business as the enterprise, if you will, interacts with the project, because there's always a lot of other things going on in an enterprise other than just the project, and you can say that's people in the way that business decisions get made, but it's also the environment that the project is taking place within, and I think that can have a lot of influence on things, either if not managed properly or in spite of being managed properly.
You're 100% on target with that. I can remember a project where I came in and IT very often does a superb job of planning their resources, that, you know, the physical environment, the test scripts, all of those things into a project plan, but doesn't necessarily do a great job overall of planning the resources of their business partners who may be required to play an important role. And if it's not planned and the financials don't reflect the plan, I mean, you can almost guarantee you're going to have resistance from your business partners in putting a project in place. So I agree, you have to take it within the context of the entire organization and the impact it would have.
So when we are tracking a project for the fact that, you know, it's going successful, or so you can say a project is successful when every piece of it is successful, at least 90% of it is successful, and that's what you define in the beginning. But then when you're looking at the rolled-up data, the people who are actually at the stakeholder level are the ones who are giving the stamp of approval. They are seeing the rolled-up data, and there could be a lot of massaging that could be done for it to look like, yes, we are going in a successful path, but whereas it may be a misleading roll-up. Do you think that happens? Do you have a way to find out if that is truly happening?
I have not seen that happen because I believe in really clear transparency. And so that, you know, when you have things that are being rolled up, that you have measures and metrics in place to actually uncover and expose them. So as I like to tell people, when things are green, you don't necessarily have to even discuss them, right, if things are running well. When things are not running well, that's when you have to expose them and discuss them to make sure that, you know, we don't complete the project, think it's a success, and everyone else thinks it's a failure. And I think, you know, that's kind of where you were heading with that. If you just keep it up at a high level rather than at the point where something is shifting, that you're exposing the details. And that's what I look at as transparency in a project.
I think you definitely want to keep it on a factual basis. I think, though, because people are involved, I mean, sometimes people are putting, you know, their careers are very tied up into a project and their reputation within the company. And I think, you know, there are people that at times really want things to succeed, and, you know, they're not trying to change the facts, but they're trying to make sure that we do see the successes and we do celebrate the green parts of the project, if you will, while also acknowledging and focusing on the parts that might be challenges. And I think that's a good balance to have you just can't take it too far, or you may start to get into that situation where you do start to lose transparency.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages and see if there's a way we could determine a project's probability that it would succeed by the way it's been constructed. Let's talk more when we come back from the break, so please stay tuned.
Talk about his money. Call us toll-free, 866-472-5790, and talk to the experts. We talk money all the time. Voice America Business.
CIO Decisions is the first executive IT magazine to focus on mid-sized businesses. CIO Decisions offers IT executives management strategies and advice for aligning business and IT at fast-growing mid-sized companies. Subscribe today and receive 12 monthly issues of CIO Decisions magazine at no charge to you. Visit ciodecisions.com/subscribe1.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
The Internet's only all business and financial radio network, Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjoy Gall.
Welcome back. Now the question is, how do we determine a project's probability that it will succeed from the way it's being constructed? Charles?
Well, I think from, you know, when I consider that question, I mean, a lot of factors go into success or failure of a project. I mean, we've talked about the importance of people, the methodologies, the underlying business case, the technology, the business environment, the political aspects of the project, if there are any. So, you know, based on all those factors, I think it can be difficult to predict success strictly from the way it's constructed. But I do think, you know, it's easier anyway to predict failure if certain basic elements are not in place in the way that the project's put together. And I think that includes some things like, do you have an empowered and clear business owner or business ownership committee for the program and a group that's really responsible for both the execution and achievement of the business case? Do you have good program or project management in place, you know, regardless of the specific methodology they're using? That framework, I think, is important. And then, are the risks of the program well understood? I think if there's new technology being put into place or an aggressive time frame or business case to achieve multiple stakeholders, I mean, a lot of those things, if you don't understand your risks, it's difficult to manage them. And so it may be a little harder to predict success out of the gate, but I think it is a little easier to predict failure if there are certain basic things that are not addressed.
I would just like to say ditto on that, and just one little aspect of clarity in the types of things that go into making a successful project. And not, do you understand your risk? Do you have continual risk assessment throughout a project? Because even the best project planners, unless you've actually done the exact same implementation right before you started the one that you're doing right now, it's likely that things will arise that, you know, even the best planners will not have thought of down to the detail level that we have to face in IT. So I think you need to have a continual risk assessment on really large projects to make sure that you're always, you know, looking for risks and mitigating them as you go along to make sure you stay on track.
So can we elaborate a little bit on the risk identification or proactive risk identification? Would that be done at the very project charter level, or would you do it as you're saying that new risks could get introduced?
New risk could get introduced, and then, you know, you have the activity of both at the charter level and within your project, you know, team, kind of on the ground level, the requirement to address and mitigate risks as you identify them.
And you definitely feel
that. And
that
could be escalation. You know, that could be escalation. It could be bringing it to, you know, a stakeholder, board. But to actually make sure that you don't ignore new risks as they go, because the plan was perfect as it was defined up front. Plans are rarely perfect as they're defined up front.
Yeah, I think too. You know, the length of the project really plays into that as well. Longer projects, especially, you know, things change so quickly and enterprises and with technology that I think you very much have to have that continual evaluation piece in place to understand if your risks have changed. Maybe there were fewer risks when you began the program, but as the program's gone on, you know, the risk profile has changed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since we already know that the current leadership, whether from business or IT standpoint, really don't have the patience that they would really sit for a three-year-long SAP implementation or any other ERP implementation only to find out it's going to fall flat on its face and we'll have $50 or $100 million down the drain. So they are trying to cut it short, have shorter cycles. Now, with that being said, how do you think your chances of having success are improving, or you will, before you know it, your 3 months arrive and you don't know whether it's going to, you know, be a failure or a success? Yes, the quantum of failure in terms of dollars may be less, but failure is still a failure.
Well, you know, I think you could have, you know, in terms of projects and the way that you structure, there certainly have been changes over the last, you know, several years with, you know, extreme and agile and kind of actually having what success looks like defined up front, even before you start one line of code and part of the requirements and the testing and those things, all being up front in projects allow you to perhaps have what I would say a minimized failure that is recoverable, which could be a release that has something that may not be perfect, as opposed to the, you know, the 2-3 year implementation of something, you know, such as the SAP implementation globally. So I think the danger is when you start looking at some of the shorter term is to not focus on good disciplines. Very often people throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? You know, let's go from that waterfall big bang approach to 90-day release approach, and they throw all the disciplines of good project management out the window along with that very often.
I think that's a great point. You know, decomposition is a great engineering principle. You know, make the problem smaller. You can get it done in a smaller period of time with less risk probably. But the flip side that Jane mentions is very much there, I think, in terms of people believe as you start to set those smaller deliverables, that those are much more manageable. They need less process or less oversight, and I think that's a trap you can get caught up in quite a bit. And then I think also you have to be careful if you chop your program into a lot of small pieces, you can lose your way a little bit against
Sure.
the global objective. And I think you have to, if you take that approach, which I think is a good one, there are some mitigating controls, if you will, that you have to put in place to not lose the big picture.
Now, if you were to construct a project team, I mean, I'd look at two different roles which could be very crucial to prevent it from failure. One is problem sniffers, and second are whistleblowers. What are the traits that you would look for in these people, and what kind of empowerment that you'll give? Of course, you're telling them you'll not get fired if you tell me what the problem is, but then how are you incenting them to, you know, tell you up front?
Well, I think it's an interesting area. You know, I have never seen job descriptions for either one of those roles, but I think at some level you want everyone to be a problem sniffer, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, anyone should be empowered to talk about the challenges they see with the program. I think you have to be careful with that, though, because sometimes people approach things that, well, finding the problem is more important than fixing it. you know, okay, I found the problem, I did a great job. And I think you also got to remember that we're there to achieve an objective, to overcome a business challenge, and not only do we have to identify the problems, we also have to take responsibility for going to address them. And so I think you want to mix that particular role across the project, but I don't think you want to put too much emphasis on it, or it can become the objective rather than the means to an end.
I agree with that. There's absolute balance, and that to me is part of, you know, leadership and how you communicate, because just identifying problems without actually doing some brainstorming about how you might resolve an issue that you've identified can actually be destructive to a project, right? If everybody thinks that their only job is to identify issues, that means you don't really move forward. You know, I don't know if the word is whistleblower. I like to think that, you know, when there are issues that people are empowered to discuss, both at a team level, at a management and an escalation level, with a stakeholder team, empowered to discuss issues openly. Because without that empowerment, you will have people putting their head under the ground and just praying that problems will go away. And
how about the role of an internal or independent internal IT auditor or an external IT auditor who kind of plays both roles, where he is a problem sniffer, he or she is a problem sniffer, and a whistleblower, because they are being given that job description? How often do you see, when there are millions of dollars at stake, they would spend an incremental amount on a resource like this, because he or she is not in the thick of things, so they can very clearly come in from an outside-in standpoint, give an objective view, and keep sniffing for areas, and I guess that's what their job is.
I do that on my very large projects, have a third party always involved to kind of, you know, report, and it is, I don't know how I could actually say how do you define the resume, but if I could define the personality kind of attributes, because there's almost the ability, you have to identify someone who is very thorough, very knowledgeable, you know, could probably run the project, but also has the kind of personality that is likable, even when they're telling a bad message, and is willing to communicate. They're not there just as, I'm going to, you know, tell upper management. They're willing to have the dialogue with the individuals who are having an issue and even help in kind of maybe thinking through some of how we might mitigate an issue.
I think that's a great point. In my career, I've seen a lot of external approaches, whether in the consulting world where you'd have a QA partner, or a type of case where you have that external entity, or even internal incorporations where you might have a program management office or a strategy office that would help provide some of that oversight. Again, though, I think the objectives have to be aligned. I mean, there is a third-party objectivity to help ensure success, but at the end of the day, they are also bought into the success of the program and incented to the success of the program, and not just, you know, I've seen a few cases where, you know, it's almost they take glee in the misfortune of the project.
It's more like an auditor.
Exactly. So I think you have to balance that.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages and look at the areas or the signs which would indicate trouble. While we say that an honest communication and transparency and accountability is very well defined for an IT project, it will literally ensure success, or to some extent, you can in other words say that they would rarely fail. But if that's the case, then, and if you have done all the due diligence with respect to laying out the right foundation, what would you look for which would indicate trouble, which is looming? Let's talk more about it when we come back from the break, so please stay tuned.
Money, money. Up-to-date business and financial news. Money, money. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business.
looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
You don't need a fortune to create wealth for you and your loved ones. If you have equity in your home, have a self-directed individual retirement account, or your current income property is not working like it once did, let RealSource be your difference. RealSource at RealSource.net provides its real estate investor clients with the knowledge, the tools, and the deals to build wealth. RealSource at RealSource.net introduces clients to the industry's best market research, 24/7 expert counsel and coaching, and the nation's premier real estate investment advisors. Let RealSource be your difference. RealSource at RealSource.net.
The bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sunjoe Gall.
Welcome back, folks. The question here is that while we are talking about, or we say that, or claim rather, that the honest, transparent, and accountable IT projects rarely fail or have a very strong chance of success, what are the typical signs that would indicate trouble? Jane?
Well, I think that, clearly if you don't have a good executive sponsor that actually has at least the influence across a project that may span multiple departments, that's a clear indication that, it will be lucky if it succeeds as opposed to its planned success. I think that if there is not an environment of open and transparent communications at all levels, and I mean all levels, that you're also likely to have a good chance of failure. And it would be, again, a gift if it succeeded. It would, perhaps be by accident as opposed to planned. So those are some of the big things that I think are involved with, taking a look and saying, oh. And then the financial planning. Is there, was there sound financial planning around all the resources that were required to actually execute on a project, not just the IT, but all the resources, both from an IT and a business perspective?
I agree those all apply. A couple other things I would add to the mix. I think if you're seeing lots of changes in ownership over time, if it becomes a bit of a hot potato or something like that, I think that's a good indication. But I think also, the three pillars are great and have to be there to help provide a good foundation. But ultimately, those things cannot overcome a business environment that is too challenging or a program that was kind of misaligned from the start. If you're just being too ambitious for your capabilities, or if your underlying business just is not providing the support for the initiative itself, then I think being honest, transparent, and accountable is not going to help you overcome that.
Talking about immunity that we try to give to our lieutenants, that, okay, you find a problem, you come to us, I've got an open door policy, and if you see there are issues and nobody else is talking, you blow the whistle. How about the IT leadership themselves? If they see a serious problem, how much immunity is granted by the executive management that if I've spent $10 million and I am, I've got 5 or 10 more to go, can I go back and say, hey, this is not working out, let's pull the plug on it? Would you get fired or they will embrace you for saving them $10 million?
I'd answer that with it's very similar. That's company by company, organization by organization. But certainly, if I were being asked to come in and fix something that was off, you know, kind of off charter to start with, and if you can get some of those, that agreement up front about the open and honest communication, you absolutely have a better chance of being successful. Now, if I were walking into a new organization and they're saying, we've got this big project, it's off track really bad, and we need somebody to come bring it back online, I'd certainly want to be having the absolute conversation about, don't shoot the messenger, and we may have to look at this. We need to get to what is the root cause of problems. And sometimes you just have to stop projects that, you know, it's clear that they are misaligned. It's clear that there's no chance of success in the current incarnation of a plan. And you just have to have the courage as a leader to stand up and say that, because you don't want to go in and die the slow death. I mean, eventually, as a leader, you cannot take, it can't be everybody else's fault. Eventually, you have to take accountability for yourself. Or someone else will take that accountability for you, right?
I think that's a great point. But ultimately, the people that we work for or are accountable to, I think they have the same needs that we have in terms of, you know, don't surprise me any later than necessary. Keep the information open and honest and transparent from the start. And I think you will find yourself in that situation less often. And when you do find yourself in that situation, if you've done that all along the way, I think that's a lot easier discussion than if it was, you know, a very positive and sunny disposition up till the point you just went off a cliff. And now I think that's a much more difficult discussion in terms of immunity, if you will. And then it does come down to, have you executed your responsibilities as a leader in the right way?
Yeah.
Now, what if there are business disruptions? You know, as we see the speed of business, we are acquiring companies, we're merging with others, and a technology implementation ideally should not be disrupted by that, or it should not have risks introduced just because of that change in the business ownership. However, the reality is that it does, and not because of any technological changes, but just because there would be a change in the stakeholders mix, there could be a change in the agendas of the folks now versus what it was pre-M&A. How do you handle that?
I'll add one more thing, that there could be a change in alignment to the business goals and objectives, depending on which side of the fence you were sitting in a merger as well. And I think part of that is to actually, take the breather upon the announcement of a merger, and to assess whether you should actually continue to spend and have those discussions with the new partnership as well, rather than just assuming that those things will just all iron out. Because if you need to stop spending money that's not going to actually come to anything of value, it's better to do that up front, you know, as early as possible as well.
M&A type activity, I think, certainly is a special case of that type of change. I mean, when something like that happens, a lot of bets can be off, right, because of significant changes within the organization. So I think certainly in that case, you know, you have to take a look at kind of everything that's not just core to keeping things running until you can get the new direction set. But I think in terms of changes outside of that, in terms of the business stakeholders and those types of things, those are still key moments to look at, because, you know, a certain initiative or strategic objective may have been very much a personal objective or something that was strongly represented by that owner, and whoever has the new responsibility may not have that same belief in that strategic direction, and you really have to look at that and make sure that the alignment still exists.
So there may be times when we actually see the writing on the wall that the damage is beyond repair and the ship is sinking. And at that time, there will still be few people who may be stakeholders or people who are supporting those stakeholders who would definitely advocate that, no, let's try one last time or a couple of more times to see if we can somehow salvage the situation. And there are other folks who will be looking at it and say, no, this is not going to work. Who wins the debate?
Oh, Okay. I think the who wins the debate is who comes prepared with the appropriate information and the right data. Because I think if a project is absolutely failing, and I can even recall in my career one where, you know, they were $30 million in the hole, and I could tell you that nobody could say when it was going to be completed. Absolutely. When I took it over, nobody could say when it was going to be done. And we could have spent, probably another $30 million and still been in a position of nobody could tell you when it was going to be done. That's an extreme case where there was just none of the good disciplines were in place when I came into the organization. And the business, when I said, we need to stop, I brought the business, the project management, the leadership into a room. And when I said we need to stop, I made that statement to the leadership, and I said, and they said, you can't do that. And I looked at my team and I said, tell them when this project will be completed. And when they could not respond, the business leadership said, we understand. Now, we took a breath. We regrouped. We rebuilt a team. We put all the right disciplines in place and, you know, kind of drove that. And the good news is it was completed and successful and implemented for 2.7 after we had spent $30 million with no guideline. Now, I'm not going to tell you who that was with, but it wasn't with the city of New York.
I think Jane illustrates the ultimate example of true IT courage there, right? I mean, taking an eight-figure program that, you know, is multiple times its original budget or behind schedule, I mean, that takes a lot of courage, but it's absolutely a part of our role and something that that's part of your responsibility to walk in and drive that type of discussion. I think she also points out a great example that, failure or success can rise from the ashes of failure, right? In that once you have the courage to make that call and start to consider some of the other ways to achieve your objective, you've certainly learned some of the things that don't work, and out of that, I think you can help sometimes craft a solution that still meets part of the needs or realigns the program to solve some of the key issues, or, you know, I think there can be some positive outcomes from that.
So when we are talking about innovation here, you know, we are actually having an innovation hype, or you can say everybody's trying to jump on that bandwagon and trying to change every portion of the IT organization, to say the least. With that being said, innovation definitely brings complexity and definitely brings risk. So if we do have failures with respect to this, it is almost being in an R&D lab and saying we tried something, it didn't work. But should we let it go that easy?
Well, I think the first thing to think about on that question is, it's good to try to look at if you can find ways to innovate or fail, frankly, in small steps versus betting the farm on large successes or failures. I think that's a good way to go, especially where you're dealing with innovation. But I think ultimately people are going to be more accepting of failures if they're not long and expensive and coming. You know, again, the idea is if you're trying something innovative and you know there's a risk of failure, try to provide lots of information along the way. Again, back to our open, transparent, accountable. I think in that way, if people see things going off track, you can make that call much quicker that this particular avenue of innovation may not be the one that's working out. I think, you know, there might be an exception there that if you distinctly call out up front that this is very innovative but also highly susceptible to failure, you know, then at least people know it's an identified risk up front that this is really innovative but it's also really risky. And if you get to the end where it doesn't work, then again, you've laid that right framework for the context of what you're trying to do.
I agree with that. I think some of the most interesting ones are when the business is trying to be, or challenging, interesting and challenging, is when the business is trying to be really innovative and it requires kind of a huge shift in your infrastructure and you're thinking about how you look at technology and roll things out. And hopefully, you know, some of the same disciplines are thought through on the business side and that the dialogue is going in lockstep, and that when you actually take the approaches, you can actually do them similar to like that lab, but you make sure that there's a marriage there and that we don't have just research dollars being spent where we're not really sure what the outcome that's my only issue with just kind of an R&D lab, is that I've seen, you know, technology, you know, kind of tested and worked with without a business sponsor, someone who could actually at least have some kind of thinking around how it might apply to the business. And to me, that could be a failure in itself. You know, our research was successful, our pilot was successful, but there's no place for it in the company.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages and try to explore the IT portfolio approach to measuring success or failure. This was something which was suggested by folks who are in the innovation area, but also it could be possibly applicable across a portfolio of IT projects that you're looking at. So how about if we go to our executive management, we say you're going to spend $30 million on number of projects and I will give you a 20% overall net return. You don't care whether one project fails, three succeed, or two fail, one succeed. I will give you a positive rate of return. Will this approach fly? Let's talk more when we come back from the break, so please stay tuned.
Stocks, bonds, 401ks, investments, refinancing. We can help you. Call now toll-free, 866-472-5790, 866-472-5790. Voice America Business.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
The Wealth Spa helps small business owners achieve their most important business and life goals through independent, fee-only financial and legal consulting, money coaching, teleclasses, home study kits, and books. The Wealth Spa specializes in a holistic approach to business and personal finance, teaching entrepreneurs how to reduce financial stress, manage their money, get out of debt, grow a business into an empire, and achieve real financial freedom. To get a copy of the free special reports, How to Avoid the Top 10 Money Mistakes and How to Avoid the Top 10 Business Owner Money Mistakes, and to get a complimentary subscription to the Easy and Prosper, visit thewealthspaladioshow.com.
The Internet's only all business and financial radio network, Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back to the show, folks. We were talking about treating IT as a business, or we are talking about treating IT as a business all along. So how about creating it as a business investment where we are taking an IT portfolio and we say we are going to spend X number of dollars on the investment across the board and we will give you a net rate of return, and have the business folks not get nervous and we go ahead and somehow produce those results even though some of the initiatives may fail or not bear the results as we were expecting. Would that make sense given that, you know, we really want to become a business where IT is becoming a business?
Charles?
Well, I think in terms of setting an investment pool and then just guaranteeing a rate of return on that, I think that's a pretty advanced strategy, if you will. I think there's a lot of things you have to do to build up to that. I think you have to have a very good demonstrated record of, you know, more successes than failures. And I think not only do the projects have to complete, but they have to have a good track record from a business perspective of being effectively implemented. And so you've got to really demonstrate a strong partnership and a strong methodology for implementation before you can even entertain something like that. But I think ultimately, If you can get to that point, that's a very aspirational and high-functioning approach to delivering IT services. But I think at some level companies do that anyway. They say this is what we can afford to spend. Here's our capital hurdle percentage. And they're basically saying, you know, this is the type of return on investment we want to get for that. And if we don't think we can get it, then we should invest those dollars elsewhere. And if we do, let's proceed.
I'm in agreement with that. I just see that unless there's an awful lot of low hanging fruit in IT, that strategy probably is not sustainable long term, and is more likely to be successful if you have a really great partnership and, you know, like Charles said, a demonstrated ability to execute in partnership. Because I've had a situation in the past where my partner and I, if we went hand in hand for funding for the year and for capital projects, which is state, we're not going to tell you what we're going to do, but we're going to deliver a for every dollar you give us, $2 back in the following year from the expense budget. So, you know, together we were able to actually do that. But we were both on exactly the same page, and we had built out an organization that had been, you know, really pretty disciplined in being able to execute.
When we start a project and we see that the internal constituents who are involved, but we are also, as IT is working with global businesses or businesses who are very externally connected with other agencies, invariably you will end up connecting with them from an IT standpoint as well. And when you do not have control, it further increases the risk. So how do you tame this beast and also have a plan B if at all some of those external agencies who are not in your control don't behave as you expected?
Well, from my perspective, Jane, go ahead.
Go ahead, Charles. No, Charles, go ahead, and I'll go after you.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, when you're dealing with external agencies and third parties, a lot of times, you know, contracts come into play, and I always know I'm in trouble if I've got to go dig out the contract and reread the warranty remedy sections. But because of that, you do have to spend a lot of time in setting the agreement framework up front and how you're going to interact with those third parties. I think also the more parties you have involved, the more failure can sneak up on you a little bit because you've got a lot of external dynamics, you've got a lot more communication interfaces and some things like that that may, you know, small oscillations and problems can add up to big issues pretty quickly if you either don't have a sense that's happening or aren't able to address those items. And so I think ultimately that just helps illustrate what we've talked about around the more complex the project, especially in terms of external entities, the more important that good project and program management and oversight is to make things work. And as far as plan B is, you have to be careful. You know, sometimes plan B can be worse than the disease in terms of, you know, it may be the nuclear option that you always have, but ultimately if you have to go there, it may not be a plan B that helps you be successful. And so I think, again, you try to stay out of that wherever possible, and you go back and make sure you have good relationship management with the external parties and good communication and a good fundamental agreement that keeps people in the game.
I agree 100% with Charles, and the only thing that I'm going to add to what he just said is sometimes you just have to pull a few little tactics out of your out of your pocket, and you know, especially when you're cross. You know, global perspective usually means cross-functional leadership and larger stakeholders, more complex. All of those things are all true. Is, again, going back to making sure at least as a figurehead you have someone who is the executive sponsor and that you're doing weekly reporting. And that a tactic is to let people know that the individual will be exposed for not delivering on time if there's not a communication and a mitigating strategy put in place. And people usually line up. You know, you get what you measure. And, you know, I've used that in the past where you're really, you know, you literally don't have control of all the resources that are required. And that takes influence. And sometimes, it's fine for the CIOs to be talking about their ability to influence, but when we're talking about on-the-ground project managers, it's even more difficult. And so, you know, that's just a little tactic that I think you can pull out of out of your pocket and say, when things are that complex and people aren't playing nicely in the sandbox, whether they're external agencies or companies, nobody wants to be reported that they're the reason. That they've agreed up front to deliver something in a planning stage and now are failing to deliver.
So one final very quick question. If users are the ones who are basically helping us get a buy-in and get us a better, I mean, give us a thumbs up, would you actually totally rely on their feedback, or would you just say, you know, we can only involve you so much because there's a lot of risk when we just go and follow the user?
Well, I think that user objectives and ultimate business objectives are sometimes aligned and sometimes not, right? And especially depending on what level in the organization you're working with, you know, your users may be looking for more, you know, smooth operations, easy to do things, but the program objectives may be taking them a little out of that direction. And so I think you have to certainly weigh upon their input and opinions quite a lot, but ultimately make sure that doesn't take you away from the reason you're doing the project or the business case you're trying to achieve.
I would agree with that, and also just kind of add in that it depends on the type of the project. I mean, there are projects in IT that quite frankly, besides actually having the buy-in and that you've actually kind of reviewed your business case for driving it, if you planned appropriately, you should not be impacting the users, and it has little to do with kind of the business side. They probably would have their eyes rolling if they had to spend time talking about, you know, data center consolidations or some of the things that are behind the scenes as opposed to projects that are delivering some specific business goal. And those, I think, you need to have a partnership in order to have real success with the business. An absolute partnership.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, I'd really like to thank you, Jane and Charles, for sharing your thoughts about what we can do to proactively see the signs of trouble and take necessary steps to prevent failure or timely cut our losses and avoid additional damage.
Thank you.
Thank you. We enjoyed it.
Thanks again. Now, in IT, we have heard many more horror stories related to failed initiatives than successes. And yes, we are allowed to make mistakes. However, it's not a good idea to keep repeating the same mistakes. When we see the signs of sinking ship, our quick diagnostic check should reveal if we can salvage the situation or should cut our losses. Idea should be to not fall into a trap of, we got to save this project at any cost. So how does your organization deal with an IT initiative that is showing signs of being a sinking ship? Please send us your thoughts at views@ciotalkradio.com. That is views@ciotalkradio.com. Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjog Gall, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit